Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Awilco Drilling PLC Quarter Three 2014 conference call. My name is Anna, and I will be your coordinator for today's meeting. For the duration of the call, you will be on listening only. However, at the end of the presentation, you will have opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to CEO John Oliver Bryce to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna, for that introduction, and welcome to Awilco Drilling PLC's Q3 2014 presentation. So, as Anna said, I'm John Oliver Bryce, CEO, and with me on the call today is Ian Wilson, our CFO. For those of you who have access to the internet in front of you, the call will be based around our Q3 presentation, which is on the Awilco Drilling website. So during the call then, we'll give you some highlights from the quarter. We'll go into the financial results in a bit more detail. We'll talk about operations, then we'll talk about the market, and finally, we will invite questions. So for those of you who had the presentation in front of you, starting with page five, the highlights from the quarter then. Awilco Drilling is announcing a dividend payable at a level of $1.15. The total Q3 revenue for the quarter was $76.2 million, and EBITDA for the quarter was $56 million. During the quarter, our operating cost, our OPEX per rig, was $91,600 per day. Our total contract backlog at the end of the quarter was firm work totaling $582 million. And then the numbers at the bottom, revenue efficiency during the quarter was 99.3%. So very good numbers there. Very pleased with those numbers. So backing them up in a bit more detail, let's look at the income statement for the quarter. So Ian, can you walk us through the income statement for Q3 2014?
Okay, thanks, John. Yes, the contract revenue for Q3 2014, $74.6 million, and that represents the 99.3% revenue efficiency. We see an increase over prior quarter due primarily to an increase in the day rate for Hess from $365 per day to $385, and an increase and an extended period, in fact, for the Premier work at a rate of $442.5. So combined with reimbursables, total revenue of $76.2 million. The rig operating expenses of $16.8 million equates to the $91,600 per day, and the G&A expense of $3.5 million included in there is a provision for the LTIP of $900,000, so the underlying G&A expense is $2.6 million for the quarter. There's a credit of just less than $500,000 in respect of translation gains and revaluation of the balance sheet, and depreciation of $4.5 million in accordance with previous quarters and consistent with guidance. So total costs of $24.7 million, resulting in an operating profit of $51.5 million. Interest expense in respect of the bond agreement that we have of $2.3 million, resulting in profit before tax of $49.3 million. Tax expense slightly higher than guidance at 22.5%, $11.1 million, leading to net profit of $38.1 million and an earnings per share of $1.27. We do expect to see the tax expense improving as we go into next year. The guidance that previously given has been in the region of 15%, but we'll continue to have a tax expense cost of 21%-22% through quarter four.
Okay, thanks, Ian. If we can move on to the balance sheet, and again, for those of you looking at the presentation, that's page eight.
Okay, the rigs, machinery, and equipment, an increase in the quarter of 3.2 in respect of new additions, offset by the depreciation expense for the quarter. Trade and other receivables and prepayments and accrued revenue, combined total of $52.7. All the receivables have been paid in full, and the accrued revenue in respect of September has also been paid, so there are no outstanding items or disputes with regard to receivables. The cash and cash equivalents of $60.4 million, and the current tax number should be read in conjunction with the current tax payable below, so the $75.8 million and the current tax payable of $94.3 million, the net impact there is our total current tax liability. The $75.8 million is a recoverable tax, and we'll see during the course of quarter four approximately half of that amount, approximately $30 million reduction in that amount during the course of quarter four. So total assets, $446.6 million, and below the line, the long-term interest-bearing debt of $115 million, and the current portion unchanged from the initiation date of the bond, but the first payment was made in the early part of October of $5 million plus related interest. Trade and other creditors consistent with prior quarters, and accruals and provisions slightly down compared to the previous quarter.
Okay, thanks Ian. Let's move on to an update on operations, starting with a look at Awilco Drilling PLC's current contract backlog. So this is page 10, again, if you have the presentation in front of you. So our two rigs, Will Hunter and Will Phoenix. With the Will Hunter, we have a firm contract running until the end of November 2015. We did have an option to extend up to 275 days, and that option was supposed to be called, or could have been called, last month in October, for customer Hess to commit to additional time. They were not in a position to commit to that, and we have mutually agreed to move that option date forward to February of next year. So at the moment, the Will Hunter's contract is still firm until the end of November 2015, and they have a potential option for up to 275 days, which is callable in February next year. The Will Phoenix then completed its contract with Premier Oil and moved on to new customer Apache, and that is, of course, the three-year firm term with a potential for 27 additional months of options. And a present look ahead will run until Q4 17 firm term, and then, as I said, with the options at the end. So, in summary, contract backlog for Awilco Drilling's two rigs currently standing at $550 million of firm work. Moving on to operational performance then for the quarter. I'm very pleased with the performance in the quarter. A very good operational performance in terms of uptime, achieving 99.6%. Also, during the month, as I mentioned in the contract status section, Awilco Drilling moved from Premier Oil to the Apache contract, and that was a successful and seamless startup, no downtime. So a very good start to the Apache contract. Generally, very good continued positive customer feedback. OPEX for the quarter then was slightly lower than our $95,000 per day guidance. And lastly then, in terms of operational performance, the company continues to plan and prepare for the RSA projects sometime in advance, with these projects currently scheduled for the very end of 15, start of 16. So moving on, a little bit more detail about the dividend distribution. This is page 12 of the presentation. So a Awilco Drilling announcement then that the dividend will be payable in respect to Q4 for $1.15. It will be paid on the 19th of December and will be ex-trade dividend on the 18th of November. And again, Awilco Drilling continues with distributing all free cash over and above a robust cash buffer, which is required to support operational working capital requirements and planned CapEx. So moving forward, just a few words then on assumptions for 2015 going forward, a bit of guiding here. So I'm going to pass over to Ian again, who can walk us through these three or four short bullets here about guiding for our 15 activity. Ian.
Okay, our operating expense expected to be approximately $100,000 per day, That's certainly higher than we've experienced in 2014. Average for 2014 in the region of 93, and our guidance was 95. Also, the general inflationary increase, payroll increases, to some extent offset by anticipated lower insurance cost. The SG&A expected to be approximately $3 million per quarter. That is consistent with our underlying G&A cost excluding LTIP. And total CapEx, three principal categories there, totaling $60 million. The BOP commitments that we've spoken about previously, expected expenditure in 2015 of $25 million. We've previously guided $22 million, and that's due to a carryover of 2014 cost. And the routine CapEx of $20 million, previously guided $15 or $16 million. And once again, that's due to a carry forward of expenditure in 2014 that will be done in 2015. The element of the periodic survey expenditure that we expect in 2015 will be $15 million, with the balance of $25 million taking place in the early part of 2016. I think the key aspect to take from this is that we have not deviated or changed the guidance that we've previously given. So the combined BOP expenditure, consistent with previous guidance of $45 million, and the periodic survey of $40 million being $20 million per rig.
Okay, thanks, Ian. So let's move on now and look at the market, the UK market, and again, if you have the presentation, that's page or slide 15. So within the UK then, a quarter or a period there of very low contracting activity with only two fixtures during the month. There was a diamond rig secured with Ithaca for a short program at $345,000 per day, and announced just today the Transocean Leader has secured work with EnQuest on the Kraken project, which is a four-year project, and the day rate there is $335,000. So low contracting activity, only two fixtures in the last period. If you move forward to page 16, it gives you a snapshot of the rigs in the UK. What we can see is that there is some rig availability in 2015, but we can also say is that UK operators appear to be reverting to type in terms of their contracting and tendering behaviour, and that means waiting to reducing the time for tendering activity, so waiting closer to the time for their work before they go to tender, which consequently reduces visibility of the demand in 15 and beyond. So moving forward from slide 16 into 17, and 17 talks about the market. Then the UK market is anticipated to return to higher levels of activity. Why do we think this? Well, increased operator financial discipline is anticipated then to lead to an upturn in global investment and global drilling activity. As mentioned, though, there is some seasonal rig availability expected within the UK as we talk about rigs coming off in 15, though again, there is very little visibility, which doesn't mean there isn't work there. The UK government has previously set out a new vision to maximise recovery of hydrocarbon reserves in the UK. And this is a very positive factor affecting the UK market. In addition to that high-level statement, the UK government is currently carrying out a fiscal review of taxation on operators. And the conclusions from that review will be rolled out by the UK's Chancellor of the Exchequer in his autumn statement in very early December. And we're very hopeful that there will be some new tax treatment to operators, which will in turn stimulate demand here in the UK. So that's another positive, which is turning into hopefully some tax treatment very shortly for operators. We've also said that major operators are still continuing with activity, independents continuing to exploit marginal fields, and on the back of the comment there about independents, the UK held its most recent licensing round, and this was the highest participation for licenses to date. So that sends another positive signal about the UK's future, and also about participation by independents who also prop up the demand side as well. And then finally, in terms of the UK market itself, the UK still does have barriers to entry in terms of rigs outside the region requiring compliance upgrades. So barriers to entry still help the UK market. So in summary then, looking at Awilco Drilling PLC's Q3 presentation, we have announced a dividend of $1.15 in respect to the quarter payable in Q4. Our revenue efficiency was a great result, 99.3%. We have a solid contract backlog. We have $550 million firm with 100% contract for both rigs till the end of 15. The long-term fundamentals, we believe, for the market remain very positive. And Awilco Drilling does continue to evaluate opportunities on a case-by-case basis, but very much with strict financial discipline and based on projects that will add value, not detract value, to the company. So that concludes the presentation. So if I hand back to Anna, we'll be happy now to take specific questions from the audience.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. And the first question comes from James Phelps. It's a private person. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon in Oslo, I guess. Question for you on CapEx. Will Hunter is going to be in the yard in December and January 2016. What about the timing of the $25 million on the BOP and the $15 million on the survey? Can we assume that that comes late in the year in that last quarter?
That's going to be spread across the year. We will have some expenditures in respect of payments on account, and we had some expenditure in 14 in respect of the BOPs. I don't have a specific quarter-by-quarter analysis, but it will be spread, and we'll obviously look at the timing very carefully. But the BOPs, that's in accordance with an established contract with the provider of the equipment.
Okay, and for Will Phoenix, in 2016, can we also assume a 25 on the BOP and 15 on the survey as well?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
On Will Phoenix, when it goes in the yard in 2016, will there also be about 25 on its BOP and a $15 million on its survey?
No, the figures in respect of the $25 million for the BOP, that's a joint figure of expenditure,
okay.
And that applies to both rigs. So it's a combined cost. The overall cost for both rigs that is split between 14, 15, and 16 is 45, and the current expectation is with the 25 in 15, we'll have a further $8 million in the following year in 2016.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, James.
The next question comes from Tom Sandlow, a private investor. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Does the current decline in energy prices impact your thinking about strategic opportunities?
Sorry, Tom, you're breaking up a little bit. Does the current what affect our thinking?
The recent decline in energy prices, does it have any impact on your thinking about growth opportunities?
So, Awilco Drilling has a stated philosophy of we're an opportunistic company, and we are always looking for projects which could add value. So that hasn't changed. What I would say is in a cooling market, there may be more opportunities to look for rig acquisitions, etc. But we have very strict financial discipline in terms of these. We have to understand the risk, and they have to actually add value. So I'd say that there's probably more opportunities appearing, but we will sticking to our original philosophy of they must add value, or we must understand the risk.
Okay, thank you very much.
Cheers.
The next question comes from Alexander Stohel, a private investor. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Hello, Alexander. I think we've lost Alexander.
No, Alexander Stohel. Alexander Stohel, your line is now open if you would like to ask your question.
Yes, hello. Sorry for that. I was on mute. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My first question refers to the market itself and the barriers of entry. On a September 2013 presentation, you show 22 rigs for the UK market. And I see that in the Q3 presentation now, you actually have 26 rigs in the market. So that's an 18% increase. So I was just wondering whether you could elaborate a little bit more about the barriers of entry you described for the UK market and whether you have a view on day rates, given that those barriers, you know, not necessarily seem to be so effective.
Yeah, so the barriers to entry are essentially rigs have to be compliant with what's called the UK safety case. And that is a document which must be produced by drilling contractors and then which must demonstrate that it complies with the respective legislation for all kinds of things, lifeboats, alarms, you know, blah, 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 blah. So what will happen if a rig wants to enter the UK, it must comply with the rules and regulations. Some simply can't comply because they haven't been designed correctly, but other ones can come in if they have modifications to make them compliant with the safety case. Each rig is different. Newer ones, generally speaking, have less to do than older ones. Rigs that have come from high specification areas such as Norway usually have less to do than ones that have come from possibly international areas, but there's a great range in requirements. There have been some rigs that have entered and required safety cases. One has been the Diamonds Ocean Patriot, and that was about 12 months or 8 months in the preparation that came from Singapore, and there was a great deal of cost included in that. So that was probably one of the ones on the more extreme side. So the barriers to entry basically revolved around compliance with legislation and the upgrades these rigs are required to be compliant with it. So that's the first part of your question. And the second part of your question was, how likely is more rigs to enter? Is that what you said?
Who knows, right? But then, you know, my question would be, do you have a view on day rates? Is there any visibility? Do your competitors see decreasing day rates, you know, on that list of 26 rigs? Do you have any observations there for us to share and understand?
So if you look at...
excuse me if I may just add that, obviously in comparison to your day rates, which in my view are fantastic, good job there, but just do you think that those are likely to come down given what the dynamic of the market is? I mean, 18% rig increase to me seems doesn't come as a surprise given where you guys are in terms of your day rates. So I guess what I'm saying is it's fantastic that we have the day rates we have, but then, you know, is that just a temporary phenomenon or is that here to stay?
Well, what I would say is that it's actually quite difficult to demonstrate what the future looks like because there's a reduced visibility here in the UK for contracting. In the last 2 years, there was a surge in demand and operators were contracting rigs 1 or even 2 years in the future. Now it seems to have reverted to normal behavior, and that is when operators are contracting much closer to the time when they need a rig, and therefore it's difficult for us to demonstrate what the market looks like. And the first availability of these rigs really is Q2 2015. So at the moment, we can all make our own assumptions. If you look at the most recent fixtures, there's two that have been within the last 3 months. One's a short-term fixture at 3-4-5, and one's a long-term 4-year fixture at 3-3-5.
Yeah.
So these are obviously lower than our current rates, but probably are reflective of the cooling market. And if you look at slide 15 on the presentation, you can see what history tells us about the UK market, that between 2000 and, call it 2008 and 2012, a floor then to day rates was circa $250,000 a day, and then we've obviously risen up to 400, 400 plus, and now we appear to be cooling again. And it's really about, do we take a view that that is the floor and that what lies ahead of us, or is more demand going to pop up between now and the first availability in the fleet? So at the moment, our view is we're very hopeful we're going to keep going with these fixtures very similar to the ones that have just been awarded. But looking back to that chart, that gives you an indication of what has been the floor previously.
Let's just assume for a moment that the UK market is becoming a bit more competitive. Can you, and that goes to my second question, elaborate a little bit about your, fighting, I call them fighting cash break-even cost for 2015 and 16. Well, 15, you don't have to worry, but say 16. What would your cash break-even cost be on a, day rate basis? And would you, that's the second part of the question, how do you compare those with your competitors? Would you describe yourself as being a cost leader in the UK market?
Well, I'm going to let Ian walk through the small the details of the cost, but what I would say is our OPEX is very, very competitive, I would say. That we guided at 95, and we have come under that for the quarters this year. I would say what Awilco Drilling has in comparison to the competitors in the UK, it's a very, very lean organisation. It's a small organisation. It doesn't have a main HQ to support, etc. So in terms of corporate costs, they're very, very low. And in terms of our daily OPEX, I think we're very lean as well. But Ian, if you want to make a comment on the break-even.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the underlying OPEX cost that we've got to anticipate for next year at 100,000 a day, and then to consider what we are on a break-even basis, we'd have to consider costs over and above that, and look at the level of capital expenditures that we would effectively have to subsidise. So we'd be looking at something in the region, including our G&A cost, of $140,000, $150,000 per day.
Yeah, that is indeed very, and that doesn't that includes interest cost as well.
Yeah, the interest expense, that's 2.3 per quarter, so, about 7,000 or 8,000 per day. So, yeah, it would be within the 150.
And that's okay. Following on from the company's refinance in Q1. I mean, our only borrowing is $125 million high-yield bond, which we've now paid our scheduled first $5 million payment against, plus associated interest. So that's the only debt carried by the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, it sounds to me from far that you are a cost leader. But so great job, thank you, gentlemen, for the question for taking the questions.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, a kind reminder: if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from David Reed from Private Investor. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to see if you could elaborate a little bit more on how the push of the Will Hunter option out to the end of February affects the contracting ability, considering it's due to go in December and January of next year and the following year.
Yeah, so I think it's very low contracting activity at the moment. Clearly, Awilco Drilling is promoting the rig, but I think letting this option slip to February isn't going to cause us a hardship. So we're hopeful that Hess will take it, but if they don't, we're actively marketing it for both follow-on work and potentially seasonal work just in the summer of 16, but ideally it's to do follow-on work with Hess from that option.
Okay, so if the rates are falling, would you look at doing a shorter-term contract there as opposed to considering you're looking at increased demand in 16-17, if I remember correctly. Would you look at doing some, maybe a shorter-term contract and adjusting in that way?
Well, we'll have to wait and see what opportunities are in front of us, but what we prefer is something of a little bit longer term. But it very much depends on what's available at that time. And again, we have limited visibility of firm contracts at this moment in time because the operators are just reverting to their normal behavior and just waiting to closer to the time before they go out and engage in tenders.
Certainly understand that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next questions come from Alexander Stohel, again, a private investor. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, gentlemen, I'm back. It seems there are not that many people on the call, so I take the opportunity and ask one more question. Now,
sure.
You obviously are in discussion. You've prolonged the option with HES that was just mentioned. You are obviously in discussion with the client. Can you describe a little bit how the clients explained to you why they prolonged the option? Obviously, I understand demand and supply and, you know, a looser market, and therefore they are trying to get a better deal for themselves. But do they talk about their break-even cost? Do they talk about, you know, oil prices, which is widely discussed at the moment? And when they are willing to sign up a contract again. I mean, in other words, if oil prices will go for 6 months to $75 or even $70 a Brent crude, do you think they would sign up anyway, or would they just simply wait and see?
Okay, so I think I know where you're going with this one, but the HES option is not priced. So when it gets to a point, if they decide to take it, Awilco Drilling PLC and HES come together and work out what the applicable rate is between them. So you could say in a cooling market that a softer rate may be appropriate, but I think both parties would have their own views on that. What HES are not doing is hanging on to an option to try and capitalize on a cooling market. HES are hanging on to this option because they actually don't know when they're going to finish their work. HES are undertaking a program of decommissioning wells, and at the moment there's some very, very good performance which suggests it could finish before the end of the firm term, but they haven't finished the wells and they still have a winter which is very often loaded with weather downtime. So in order to give themselves keep all the cards, if you like, they have not declared on this option at the moment because they might not actually need that time. So it's really because they don't know how much time they'll need for this rig to finish the decommissioning program. They're just keeping it hanging on. It's not to capitalize on the day rate, though I'm sure they'll have their own view on the day rate if and when we get to a point about agreeing an option. It's purely because they don't know how much longer they need the rig for.
Got it. Now, let's assume for a moment the market is cooling off extremely and HES doesn't need that option, as you were just describing. It's more binary in the outcome. And you wouldn't find another client. What would be the modus operandi for you guys in terms of your getting your operating costs down? Would you lay off these people, or would you have to? Would you keep the team a bit? You know. What would we have to expect in that case in order for you to minimize your operating cost while you don't have a client?
Yeah, sure. So our plan A is to secure more work and keep the rig working continuously.
Sure.
That's our plan A. And you know, we wait for tenders and we proactively go out and speak to customers and we come up with all kinds of creative ideas. So that's plan A. In the event that there is a gap, we have to try and understand what that gap is and how long it lasts for, and then you can take various views on that. We can keep the rig in full readiness, which makes it very attractive for a customer, or we can scale back some costs in terms of operating costs and people. And traditionally, the ways of doing that are hot stack when the rig's ready to go, warm stack when there's a slight reduction, and cold stack. A cold stack is a kind of committal to a long term, which is really something that is a sort of last resort. But we are still, as a company, very positive about the long-term fundamentals, and we're optimistic, and we're trying extremely hard to position ourselves to secure work and operational performance as we've delivered continuously and certainly the last quarter. One other thing I would say is building up our unique selling point in terms of decommissioning knowledge positions the Awilco Drilling and especially the Wilhunter Hunter very favorably for follow-on work.
And is in that regard, is decommissioning work priced in the same way as is drilling work?
It has been. It is basically the hire of a rig to do well work. When you're drilling a well, you're obviously drilling down. When you're decommissioning a well, you're just pulling all the stuff out of the well which you put there in the first place. It still needs a drilling rig that floats. It still needs all the same equipment. Traditionally, it's always been priced at the same level. There is actually an upside in decommissioning compared to drilling, and that is that it is a little bit lighter on the equipment. It doesn't drive the pumps so hard. Doesn't, you know, you don't have to lift quite as much in terms of weight, etc. So, in terms of potential risks for downtime, etc. on equipment, then it's actually better work to have in terms of reducing that risk. So a small upside there as well.
And is that in terms of time? Are these similar length contracts? Decommissioning work.
Well, I mean, a well, every well is different, and if you can say a well can take 30 days or a well can take 6 months. You know, on average, if you had to guess a number, a well would take 90 days. Decommissioning is relatively new in terms of big campaigns in the UK, and the Wilhunter is helping to establish norms as well as knowledge, which again makes it very attractive to customers who want a proven rig for decommissioning activity.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jacqueline.
You're welcome.
We have two more questions, and the next questions come from Brett Gould from as a shareholder. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
As an individual investor, one of my main concerns, of course, is upcoming dividend during the time period that the rigs will be in for maintenance. Can you explain, does the company foresee paying any dividend during that time? And if so, how will the company be able to pay that?
Okay, at this point in time, you know, we've got a good, clear dividend policy where we endeavor to pay our free cash flow back to shareholders, taking into account the requirement to have a good, robust cash buffer and looking at working capital requirements and future capital commitments. So we haven't got to the point where we have established the level of dividend that will be paid even next quarter, let alone, you know, a year and a bit down the road when we go through the SPSs. So it really depends on these factors. And, of course, principally and most important is the operating efficiencies that we can generate over the course of the firm contract term.
Sure. And I understand I'm asking for a period more than a year out. I'm just asking more of the philosophy of the company that, if possible, especially for retail investors such as myself who are investing in the company for the high dividend return, whether, you know, the odds of receiving a dividend during this time, you know, is something that the company is thinking about, and, you know, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it is certainly something the company is thinking about. There are options considered whether to refinance in any regard, but that really is all part of a board decision process. And whilst it's been discussed at the board level, we're not in a position really to commit to anything at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Before we let the next questionnaire go ahead, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from Clint Eddington from Beacon Hill. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Just wanted to make sure that I heard you right on the initial presentation regarding the tax rate. My understanding, what I think you said, is you think it'll still be at that 20 to 22% rate for Q4, and then you think it will move into that mid to high teens rate that you've previously guided at. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, the basis for that is that the effective tax rate that we have projected for 2014 in quarters 2, 3 and 4 is effectively a blended rate for the quarters, and we have taken steps as a company to restructure, and that restructure process has been completed during the month of September, and we will see the benefits of that taking place effective 1st of January. So we'll
Is that where I see the modification of the ownership structure on Will Phoenix?
That's correct.
Okay. So looking forward into 2015, your guidance would still be 15 to 17%, somewhere in that area?
Yeah, 15% is what we're guiding.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Cheers.
There are no questions coming through, so I will hand the call back to CEO John Oliver Bryce. Thank you.
So thanks again, Anna, for managing today's conference call, and thank you all to the participants for listening in and volunteering your questions. That concludes the Awilco Drilling conference call. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now replace a handset to end the call. Thank you.